had to get out of here?
Needed
some change of scenery?
Yeah, change of scenery. And I just feel like podcasting scene over there too is
better.
It's pretty big. So
yeah,
we'll see. Is this your first podcast?
This is my third, but the other ones were a little bit different.
Okay. How did those work out?
It was just a little bit different of a, like, yours is very like intimate.
Yeah.
I think. Whereas like, I feel like the ones that I did before were very structured. Mm. Like it was just very like more like question and answer.
Gotcha.
Versus like an opportunity to just like have a conversation.
Yeah.
I feel like yours is more like,
it's more casual for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was it here in El Paso?
No, it wasn't actually. Oh, okay. I did one in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did one in Houston.
Houston?
Yeah, where I'm going right now.
Hell yeah. Dude, that's exciting. We'll definitely get into that. Apologies, bro, if I fucking cough. I've been trying to kick this cough for a while, but
no worries.
If it happens, it happens, but I'm going to try my best.
Hey, man, take it easy.
Yes, sir.
It is what it is.
But yeah, this is episode 66 of The Most Vulnerable Player. We're sitting here with Brian Novak. We've known each other, I think, literally this time last year when I probably met you. I think it was the first time I think I met you was, I think, at Union East. I think that was like the first time. And then I remember we had like a pretty like I had talked to you for the most time I have at that. It was actually the West Side Run. We were like running together.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's kind of how I like got to know a little bit about you. And then ever since then, just been the homie and just see each other pretty often. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, we met at the Union Draft House East Run,
mm-hmm.
which was like, you know, the first, I think, big like kickoff run mm-hmm. for Run For It. I think that was like the first time that you looked at the crowd and you were like, wow, this is something special.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, for sure. I remember it was Union West.
West, I think.
Or no, it was the Lola Rose Run.
Oh yeah. Yes. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. It was in my neck of the woods. Uh-huh. And yeah, we ran together that time. Mm-hmm. I think we spent the entire time talking. It was interesting because it was such a terrible route to run and talk. But yeah, that was when I got to know you a little bit better. And then, yeah, our relationship kind of just, you know, fountainheaded from there.
For sure. Did you know, like, how long had you known Freddie and Thomas and Dustin and them?
Oh, man. Like, barely.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. I met Fred at the run. Mm-hmm. I was always a runner on my own. And I remember, like, I heard about Run For It.
Mm-hmm.
And this was early, like, maybe August. And I heard about it and I was like, oh man, I'm gonna go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and like the first day that I went there, Fred approached me and was like, man, like you have a lot of swag. Like, why aren't we friends? And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, so we just like, it was that conversation that led to us like exchanging contact information and then starting to hang out regularly. And that's how I met Fred. And then I didn't know Thomas at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until that they brought me on board with Run For It that I actually met Thomas, like, in an actual conversational setting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was weird. And at first, I thought Thomas hated me.
Really?
So, like, when you know, they approached me and was like, hey, you know, Fred's leaving. We need you to take, you know, come on board and kind of take Fred's role. I was like, man, how are we going to talk to Thomas? Like, Thomas hates me.
What, was it just because he was just like, he didn't talk to you? Or what was it like the...
Yeah. Thomas is just an interesting person. Like, Thomas is extremely personable once he like gets to know you, but like is a massive introvert. And so like, I feel like now that I know him, I understand that he's just in his own world and doing his own thing. Mm-hmm. And he's constantly thinking about things. Like the next steps and what we need to get done and what needs to happen or things outside of it with like work or whatever. I feel like he's always 10 steps ahead of everything. And so just because of that personality trait, we never talked. Like I talked to everybody else and he just never said anything to
me. Yeah, that makes sense. Definitely. I could see that as Thomas, but I feel like once you do get to know him, he's like a, definitely a character.
sure. Absolutely. Probably the out of all of us, I think Thomas has the most character. Mm. Which from the outside looking in, you would never know.
Yeah.
Or Dustin.
Hey, Dustin.
Dustin's crazy. Yeah, I met Dustin through a work colleague.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I had already known Dustin prior to Run For It. But yeah. Other than that, yeah.
Dude, that's sick. It's such a... It's just crazy because I've met so many people through Run For It. Yeah, it's just crazy. Like the... I don't know, just... I guess maybe other cities, like with the run clubs and stuff, you kind of get more of a taste of it. But it's definitely the so unique to me, at least. Just the whole environment and... Just, I mean, that's how I met all you guys. So it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the coolest things about Run For It. You know, we've gone all over. You mm-hmm. know, I've been to, you know, Raw Dog Run Club in Austin. I've been to Anaka's Run Club or Good Guys Run Club in Houston. I've been to Koreatown Run Club in Los Angeles. I've been to Chicago's Run Club in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I think the unique thing about El Paso and Run For It here is that it's such a community. Like you can go there and you might meet your best friend.
Yeah.
Like somebody that you'll be friends with forever. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really love about it. Mm-hmm. Some of my best friends in the world, you know, like if you look at the team, right? Like we call them the team. I don't know how you describe us, but like Thomas, myself, Fred, Dustin, Brenna, Kristen, Naomi, Udi, like we're all so different mm-hmm. of individuals. Like if you think about like what we do outside of Run For It, like in our professions, like the type of person we are, how we live our lives, like we're all so very different.
For sure.
But somehow like Run For It has made us such a clique of individuals.
Yeah. And it's cool to see how you guys have such a like a good system. What was like when you first got on board, did you guys know like, what like I'm sure it took some time to kind of get used to like what everybody's roles were, or do you think it just fit in seamlessly?
Oh man, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. I think Thomas and I fit immediately. Mm-hmm. Like once we realized what this was and what we're doing, it was like Thomas and I, it's like we share the same brain sometimes. Like some things that I'll be thinking, he's like right on. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. With everyone else, it was like understanding what they're good at and trying to highlight and optimize that in mm-hmm. a certain capacity. Everybody just, I think, fell in love with what Run For It was and just wanted to continue to expand that. And so, you know, there was no egos, there was no like, you know, popularity contest or whatever. Everybody just mm-hmm. was like down for whatever.
Yeah, that's sick. And do you feel, because you're basically, at least from my point of view, every time, like, you're the one that goes up on whatever stage it is, or just you're elevated and you're the one talking and kind of getting everybody hyped up. Have you kind of always had that personality of just being so open in, like, a public setting and just kind of being kind of charismatic like that?
I think I've always had it in me. I think through different stages of life, I've like came in and out of it. Mm-hmm. Like I think truthfully, personally, I'm an introvert at heart. Mm-hmm. Like I don't like being the center of attention. I don't like being the person that everyone has their eyes on in the room. Mm-hmm. But through what I do professionally, I think it gave me a gateway to be confident speaking in front of people. Being comfortable with knowing what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it, and expressing the message. Mm-hmm. Again, Run For It just makes it so easy.
Yeah.
Like everybody loves everybody. Like there's never any drama. There's never any like anything. So, you know, getting up in front of everybody and getting them hype and everything, it just seemed like a natural thing for me. Yeah. And that was like Fred's big thing when he was leaving, was like, hey, I need you to take my spot. And Fred's like the ultimate extrovert mm-hmm. when it came to the group.
For sure. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And so for you, like you personally, so you're in wealth management, basically financial advising. What kind of, what's like your day-to-day like how would you explain what you do, what your career is in that?
Yeah. So I'm a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess relationship building, mm-hmm. I would say is more what I do than anything else. I think that a lot of people, when they hear that I'm a financial advisor or I work in wealth management or risk management, a lot of people think that it, like, I sit in front of a computer and I like watch the stock market,
yeah,
and, like, picking and choosing what's the next, you know, GameStop or AMC. And it's really not like that at all. Really, like, my day to day is like meeting with individuals and talking to them about, like, what is it that they do and who they are, like, personally, professionally, financially, like, getting to know who they are, and then look at what their goals and objectives are. You know, a lot of people have ideas of what they want their futures to look like, or, you know, they know that they should be doing things better economically, you know, whether it's in the day to day of, like, saving and budgeting their money, or, you know, looking further out in the future as far as, like, investing their money for retirement, or, you know, a down payment on a house. And so learning what those goals and objectives are give me an opportunity to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, like, knowing your picture in totality, what are some things that you could be doing right now to better your future, better the outcome? And the cool part about what I do is, like, everybody's at a different age and stage of life. So, you know, some people are extremely far in the future. You know, they've been investing and saving their money for 25 years and they're close to retirement and they have anxiety around, like, what does that look like? Like, how does my money last? How is it distributed back to me? How does taxation work? You know, and you get to give them peace of mind and confidence in that.
Got you.
And then there's some people that, you know, they haven't even started that journey and they're just walking around in the dark. And I just, like, I'm the flashlight. Like, I come in and I'm like, hey, you know, first of all, give yourself a break. Like, this stuff isn't taught to you. Finance isn't taught to you at all. Even, like, going through college and taking financial courses, like finance courses, like, it really didn't apply to what I do professionally. It's really just real world hands-on experience.
Yeah. And did you envision yourself doing that when you were younger?
Not at all. No, man. Like growing up the way that I did in such a hard, you know, life, I never knew what I wanted to do. Like, we never had those conversations in my house. Like, nobody ever was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Right. And, like, when you're in school, when you're in, you know, elementary school, middle school, they're asking you those things. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? You just give them the answers that you think that they want to hear. Right. Like, everybody wants to hear that you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or an astronaut. I absolutely had no idea. Nobody in my my birth family had ever went to college. Nobody had ever gotten a degree or had, like, a career. And so when I finally, you know, I got adopted when I was 16 or 15, and my adoptive family, they kind of, like, were, you know, the more successful people. Like, they went to college, they had great careers and good jobs, and they were very, like, adamant about, like, you know, structure and rules and, you know, going to college. And so when I was graduating from high school, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do or where I was going to go. And my adoptive mom, she sat me down and she's like, well, what are you going to do? You have to have a plan. Like, Brian, there's always got to be a plan.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have no idea. You know, she's like, well, do you want to go to college? And I'm like, well, how do I pay for college? She's like, well, we'll pay for college. And I'm like, you saved my life. Like, how could you give me more?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, what are you going to do? There has to be a plan. And I knew that I didn't want to stay where I was. And so started looking into it. And I was like, well, I need to go to college, but I want to do it on my own way. So I joined the military. And that's how I ended up paying for college. And through the course of going through the military, I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to study medicine. Like, I'm going to go be a doctor. So I did that. I went to UTEP right after I got out of the military here in El Paso.
So you grew up in Chicago, right?
Grew up in Chicago, yeah.
Okay, and then when you graduated, you went to military, and then you moved to Fort Bliss?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So I, right out of high school, I joined the Army. I was in the Army for 4 years. I went to Korea, I went to Afghanistan, and then eventually I came here to Fort Bliss. I was at Fort Bliss for, like, I don't know, a year. And I was getting ready to get out. My best friend, who I call my brother, he had already moved to El Paso with me. And so I was like, well, we might as well stay here. I applied to UTEP, got in, and I got my first degree was in biochemistry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was like completely different than what I'm doing right now. But I was like, all right, cool. I'm gonna go to medical school. Like, I'm gonna be a doctor. Mm-hmm. So I did a bunch of surgical internships when I was at UTEP. And then I was getting ready to graduate. I took the MCAT. I got into medical school and realized that it was going to take me another, 10 years, $400,000 to get to a point where I was actually making the kind of money that I wanted to make. And I had a mentor at the time who was a financial advisor, right? When you're going through the process to get into medical school, they bring financial advisors to you, right? That they want to talk to you because they want to get you as clients before that you become what you're going to eventually become. And I called him up and I was talking to him and I was like, yeah, man, I'm not going to do it anymore. Like, I'm going to go back to school. And he's like, for what? I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm just going to go back to school, do something else. And he's like, man, well, you should really give this a look. Like what? He's like, yeah, be a financial advisor. I was like, I have a degree in biochemistry. Like, what does that have to do with finance? And he's like, it really isn't about that. You know, what I do is relationship building. You're charismatic. You have a lot of friends. You know, your history and what you've been through in life, being an athlete, you know, being in the military, overcoming what you've overcome as an individual, it bodes really well in our career for success. The success rate is really low, but your attributes will contribute to that success. So you should do that. And I was like, all right, I'll
try it.
I'll give it some thought.
Yeah.
And so I took that year off. I taught here at El Dorado on the west side.
Oh, wow.
I mean, on the east side. Because I was like, well, I need to do something, you know, and I could just take a certification and go teach. Yeah. Like, I just took the test and then I was in. And at the end of that school year, I was like, yeah, teaching would never be something that I would do.
What was it about? Like, what was the hardest part for you about it?
Just like, I felt like a glorified babysitter, right? Like, the education system isn't designed to, you know, better these kids' lives or like help them make fruitful decisions for their future. It's more just, you know, to groom them into being great employees for when they graduate. And so, like, I always found myself when I was teaching, like, spending more time talking about life and applicable knowledge to their futures than I did talking about medical interventions or, you know,
just whatever curriculum you require.
Exactly. And so at the end of that school year, I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to come work for you. I called him up. Hey, you know, Sean, can I come work for you? He was like, no, that's not what I meant. I was like, what do you mean that's not what you meant? Like, you said I could, you know, I should go into this career field. And he's like, yeah, but it takes 5 years to be successful. You know, 14% of individuals that join financial services make it to year five. If you make it to year five, you have a 90% chance that you'll be in this field for the rest of your career.
Oh, wow.
But it's the lessons that you will learn within those 5 years that make you who you are. If you come work for me, it'll be too easy. And so this is what I want you to do. I want you to look at who are the major players in, you know, financial advising in your city, and I want you to apply to them. And then it's a recruitment process. Like, it's not an interview process, but a recruitment process. See who wants to recruit you. Do your research. Take the job. And if in 5 years you still want to come work for me, you can do that. I'll have a spot ready, open and ready for you.
Sick.
And so that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
I applied to the five major brokers here in El Paso for this, and, you know, got vetted by all of them, got offers, and chose Northwestern Mutual, and have been here ever since.
Hell yeah. And what is it about, like, why do they say those first 5 years are so hard?
A lot of people don't have the intestinal fortitude to go out and do what it takes, right? Like, I don't have a Rolodex or a phone book of people that I'm calling and, you know, asking to set a meeting with. everybody that I, you know, I have over 300 clients, 18 different states.
Yeah.
And everybody I've ever, you know, onboarded as a client, I met organically, either like in person through my own personal relationship with them, or I got referred to them from somebody that I had already met.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. People don't want to like put themselves in uncomfortable positions to like get meetings and take them people through a process.
Yeah.
The second thing is like, we don't get salaries, right? So like, I don't have like a fixed income that like, no matter how, if I show up to work or not, I'm going to make money.
Yeah.
Right. Like I make money off of the, you know, the business that I do, the clientele base that I'm, you know, manage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those two things I think are the hardest two things that people can't overcome. They can't get out of their own way. They won't do the work necessary to succeed.
For sure. And was that a, what is it? Was it a struggle for you in the 5 years, or do you feel like you excelled like pretty quick?
Oh man.
sorry.
I think in my world, I've always felt like I would bet on myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the thing that helped me was books, like reading books, you know, realizing that, you know, the greatest people who ever lived have also had to deal with these kind of things. Like they were also in those positions, you know, that, you know, you look at people and you watch their lives and you see it from a distance and you're like, oh man, it must be so easy.
Yeah.
But when you read the books, you realize like, no, they went through the same things. Mm-hmm. And so I never felt like this was just me. Like when I was going through the hardships, when I was struggling to find my way, I always felt like, okay, great. Like I'm just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. Like they experienced these same things. And because they did it, like I could do it too.
Mm.
And yeah, so I experienced all of them. Like my first managing director, when I started in my career, he told me that that this business is an emotional roller coaster. And do you like roller coasters?
I'm a fan.
Fan, yeah. Right. They're fun for like the 30 seconds to a minute and a half that you're on the ride.
Yeah.
But if you had to ride that roller coaster all day, it'd be brutal.
Yeah.
You know, in this industry, you can be at the heights of ecstasy and the depths of desperation all in the same 20 minutes. And so as long as you remove yourself emotionally from the situation, like you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Just continue to think about it logically. Understand that there are only so many things that you can do given any given situation. Like just go execute those any given situations.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Is there a book that you remember reading when you were coming up that like changed your perspective on a lot of things?
Oh my God. I mean, that's such a loaded question.
Yeah.
I'm
sure there's a good amount, but maybe one where like it was at a point in your life where you're like, oh shit, like I needed this, you know?
Oh man. I could name 10.
Yeah.
But when you said it, when you asked the question, the first book that came to mind was The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino. And it's interesting enough. I was just talking about this book earlier today, but the premise of the book is, you know, there's a salesman. It's written in the 1400s in, you know, Egypt, and there's a salesman, and he finds this chest with these 10 scrolls. And the rules of the scrolls is you have to, you know, read each scroll and then go out and practice it for 30 days. And then come back, you get the next scroll. But one of the scrolls is, I will persist without exception.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when you said, you know, was there one book that, you know, helped me get to this point, that resonates with me all of the time. Like with everything that I do, you know, running, you know, Monday I ran 20 miles.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Every time I was, you know, feeling like I wanted to stop, when I wanted to quit, like the idea of that I will persist without exception is like, no matter how hard it gets, no matter, you know, whether I feel like I'm failing, whether I feel like I'm succeeding, whether I think things are going bad or good, like if you just persist through always there, that's success.
Yeah.
You know, success isn't, did I reach the peak of the mountain? Did I, you know, did I make this amount of money? Did I go on this vacation? Did I buy this material item? I think success for me is that I don't fail myself. Mm-hmm. Like I'll just continue to try and try and try and try and try until, you know, something happens.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I definitely need to get that book. That sounds super interesting.
Super easy read. And, you know, not to be a spoiler, but the greatest salesman in the world at the end of the book will surprise you.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And kind of, is there like a moment, like when you think back to like when you're growing up, that comes to mind when you feel like just really influenced you and the person you are today, whether that can be good, maybe sometimes bad, but something that comes to mind that.
Man, I think it all does.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when people actually sit down with me and they have a conversation about like my childhood or like the way that I grew up, a lot of people tend to feel sorry for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I tell them not to, like, I'm extremely grateful for everything that happened throughout the whole course of my life. Every single experience I've ever had, I'm truthfully grateful for, because it has molded me and shaped me into the man that I am today. Like, I wouldn't be this person without that, you know? But I would say for me, the drastic changing point was definitely being adopted.
Mm.
You know, growing up in a really impoverished situation with, you know, parents that were less than equipped to raise children.
Yeah.
And, you know, being surrounded by, you know, poverty and people not doing things and, you know, looking like everybody else around you. You know, getting adopted put me in a more influential situation that let me know that anything's possible, like that you can really do anything. And so, you know, realizing that structure and commitment and dedication and communication and all those things are important in life, I think that's the thing that like flipped it on top of its head.
Yeah.
Because if you look at, you know, my siblings and, you know, my birth siblings, people I grew up with, and you look at where I'm at, like we live completely different lives.
Mm.
And, you know, I was the only one that got taken out of that situation.
Mm.
And so, you know, extremely grateful.
What was the reasoning for that? That you were the only one?
Yeah. So my situation was unique.
Yeah.
So I originally lived with both my parents. So it was my birth father, my birth mother, and then I had five siblings. There was five of us. And my parents got divorced when I was 13. And when my parents got divorced, there was like an ultimatum situation. It was like, live with me, live with your father. But if you live with your father, I want nothing to do with you moving forward.
Mm.
And so I went to go live with my father. And, you know, growing up, I only knew him as like the disciplinary person. Like, I didn't really have a relationship with him because he worked at a factory and he worked mid shift. So like he would go to work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He'd get off at 11 PM.
Mm.
And so he'd be asleep when I went to school and then gone by the time I got home from school and then didn't get home until after I was already asleep.
Yeah.
So I really didn't have any relationship. The only time that I would see him was like during the discipline.
Yeah.
And so when they split up and I moved out, I was the only one that went to go live with him. And so the relationship, the dynamic between us changed drastically. Like, he went from being, you know, like a father figure or a disciplinary person to like he wanted to be my friend, which was unique, right? Like, I never had that experience before. And I lived with him for, you know, a year and a half, basically. And it was weird because like I already didn't have structure, but then structure took a completely different route.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing the wildest of things, being involved in the wildest of activities with people I had no business being with, you know, drinking and partying with, you know, grown-ups.
At and I'm like 13,
12, yeah, 13 years old.
Yeah.
It was just wild.
Mm-hmm.
And
Chicago isn't considered like the safest place either.
No, yeah, Southside Chicago, 88th and Buffalo, right? So I was with him and and he had a girlfriend at the time that he wanted to move away. And so one day I came home, long story short, and he had left. He had moved.
Mm.
Basically just told me good luck. So I became homeless. And I was homeless for a while. You know, I was crashing on couches, friends' houses, my birth sister. I stayed with her for a while. And I remember I got caught. I was sleeping under the bleachers at school.
Oh, shit.
And by my head basketball coach, was a super cool guy. And he was like, hey, man, like, I can't have you doing this. And so I want you to know, like, if I catch you again, like, I got to report it. So I didn't know what to do. And at the time, one of my best friends, Sheldon, she was the only person that I knew who had a car, like, and that could get around.
Yeah.
So I remember calling her and I was like, hey, like, I don't know what to do. I need help. And she came pick me up, took me to her house. I had been to her house so many times because her parents were such great people. They would take care of us. They'd look after us. So after basketball games and stuff, we'd go to their house. They ordered pizza and soda and the whole nine. And she was like, hey, yeah, you can stay here tonight. Like, I'll talk to my mom. It'll be totally cool. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, I didn't really have a relationship with their parents. Like, I just knew them from the interactions when I'd come over. And I was like, all right, cool. So I went. I stayed that night. We went to school the next day. The next day, we came home from school. She's like, hey, we need to sit down and talk. I'm like, all right, cool. So we sat down. She's like, tell me everything. So I told her everything. And she's like, all right, you get the rest of this week through school, and then this weekend we're going to spend time. We're going to find out, you know, where you're going to go. And so the whole week went by, and Sheldon, her brother, he played college football. So it was like coming to the weekend, and Dee, my adoptive mom, my mom, she was like, hey, this weekend James has a football game. We don't miss sporting events around here. So unfortunately, this weekend won't be a good weekend to figure things out. We're going to go to the game. You should come with us and you'll have a good time. And then next week we'll figure it out. I'm like, all right, cool. So I went to the game. It was awesome. And then that next week, the week flew by, and, you know, we got to the weekend, and she's like, hey, look, you've got like a month and a half worth of basketball left. Like, finish out the basketball season. This will give us ample amount of time to, like, reach out to relatives, like, your grandparents, aunts and uncles, see who we can take you to, because we want to make sure you're in a good situation.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, cool, let's do that. One thing led to another, and it was like, all right, well, we finished the basketball season, and they were like, hey, you know, stay until the end of the school year. You're almost there. Mm-hmm. Like, and then it was like, hey, you help out so much around the house, you know. Our neighbor, he owned a construction company. He's like, you can work for him for the summer, make some money, hang out in the pool. They had a pool.
Yeah.
Hang out during the summer. During the summer, we'll figure out. And then you'll start at a new school next year. And then again, one thing led to another to finally, it was like, we'll just take care of you moving forward.
Wow. And so they're the ones that ended up adopting you.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
Changed my life forever. You know, I say that all the time. My mom saved my life. She's like the biggest godsend in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Dude. Yeah, that's, I know you had touched on it briefly like a while back, but we had never like really talked about it. Was during that time, did you understand like the magnitude of like your situation?
No, not at all. No. Yeah. Yeah. When you grow up poor, like you just accept like everything for what it is.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really think things are as bad as they are. And it wasn't until like being an adult and like having to address those childhood traumas that I realized like, wow, like what I did go through was something that was, you know, noteworthy. And, you know, when I finish writing my book, like it kind of explains everything.
Yeah. So you're writing a book right now?
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
How far along are you?
Chapter 7.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I've always, like, throughout my whole life, I've always felt like my life was like a movie.
Yeah.
Like, written like a book. And everything happens in chapters. So, like, chapter 1 was like my adolescence, like, as much as I can remember from like my young childhood.
Yeah.
And then the second chapter was like everything that happened after my father left and I got adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And then my third chapter was like the army,
mm-hmm.
right? Like everything that I experienced in the army. And then the fourth chapter was, you know, going to college. So college was awesome. An epic time of my life.
Yeah.
Chapter 4 was all about college. Chapter 5 was like me leaving college and starting my journey in the real world, like teaching and then getting into finance and following a career in finance. Chapter 6 is all about my relationship. So I left a long-term relationship in November of 2023. So we were together for like 6.5 years.
Yeah. Oh, so that was around that time of like Run For It.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it was cool because it was a great transition. Like they really helped me through that process.
Yeah.
So 6 was all about like the relationship.
How long did
you
say that was?
6.5 years.
Oh, wow. So that was probably your entire time here in El Paso?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like the entire time. Like basically right after I got out of the military and started college. Like it was my freshman year of college, sophomore year of college.
Damn. Yeah.
And then
chapter 7?
And then so chapter 6 was all about the relationship. Mm. And then chapter 7 is known as the Great Reset. So it was like everything changing in my life.
Yeah.
You know, going from being in a relationship and like building a life with someone, you know, we had house and cars and dogs and a life.
Mm.
And then it was like all of that was gone in a moment. And so it was the Great Reset, like everything was resetting. And then so then it kind of outlays me getting into Run For It and the relationships that I built through that. And then now the big move to Houston.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Dude, that's so dope. That's very inspiring as someone who likes to like really likes to write as well. So like throughout this process of writing the book, like what does that look like for you? Are you writing like every day, every week? Like, and what's the process of your like
ideas? The penmanship of it.
Yeah.
So really it started with notes in my phone. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a big note taker, and so like whenever I have these grand ideas or big thoughts, like I like to put it down because like thoughts are so they come and they go, like it's like a dream, right? Like you can have the most vivid dream in the world and then you wake up and you're like, wait, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big note taker. So it started like that. And then as I got older, I was like, man, like everybody writes books, like I could write a book too.
Yeah.
So I started putting my thoughts down into like a Word document. And then it got to, okay, great, like how does these like how do you outlay it in a way that like you're telling, it's like a parable, like somebody can read your book and feel like they're going on that journey with you.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started to rewrite it, like condense the notes into sections.
Yeah.
And then a good thing is that like I think being you know a thoughtful person, like you can feel when things are changing and you know like the point of one chapter is ending and there's a start to a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing how to make that transition.
Yeah. That's so dope how like whether we realize it or not, like our lives are very much a story that once you actually start to look back and process those things, like like you can literally, you know, the changes that happened at this time and that transition period. It's just, it's amazing. And I feel like it helps you. Like if you think about your story, if you think about like, your life as like a movie or a story, then like you kind of act as if like, all right, like what's the next step of my story? You know, what would make, and also what would make that story, you know, greater?
Yeah, better. Absolutely. Think about it like what we were talking about earlier about persisting without exception.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the character, the main character of the story fails and quits or dies, you know, 45 minutes into the movie, like, is it a really good movie to watch?
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's like the Truman Show. You ever watched that movie?
I've heard so much about it, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, the Truman Show is a Jim Carrey movie where he's an actor. He thinks he's living his real life, but it's really a TV show.
And everybody's in on it, right?
Everybody's in on it except for him. Exactly. And so like when you think about your life, it's like, imagine there's cameras on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would you do if you knew that everybody was watching?
Yeah.
You know, that's a big difference. Like, a lot of people operate in the dark and the shadows. Like, imagine that everything was out in the light.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, living your life that way, you know, allows you to make better decisions for yourself because, like, I am the main character of my story. I am the hero in my story. I can be the hero or the victim. Yeah. It's my choice. I've just always felt that way and will continue to live my life that way. And the story's going to be epic. Like there's just so much more to come.
Yeah. Do you have a name for the book yet?
Yeah. Tis the Nature of Walking.
Tis the Nature of Walking.
Yeah. Like you walk through life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they always say. Like you're walking through life. You know, people look at their lives and they think, woe is me, like this happens. Like, you know, I'm always getting the short end of the stick. I'm always, you know, I can't ever catch a break. Mm-hmm. And that's just the nature of it. Yeah. Like, so it's the nature of walking through life. Like you walking through this experience, everything isn't going to be great. But it's for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's developing you. So 'tis the nature of walking was like the idea behind, you know, good, bad, or ugly, it is what it is.
Yeah, that fits a lot. That seems like very... Do you read like a lot of Stoic books?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that whole idea is just kind of... I guess, yeah, kind of proceeding forward just because it's something you have to do. It's kind of like your duty, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely love that message. I'm excited, bro. I'm excited for that read.
It's going to be epic. I actually am not writing it for anyone to read.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until, you know, maybe a year or 2 years ago, I was having conversations with people like, when am I going to read it? I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's not done.
Yeah, yeah.
My life's not over. So I'm hoping to be like, you know, when Napoleon Hill wrote Outwitting the Devil, mm-hmm. right? Like he wrote Outwitting the Devil and he never put it out. Like it was just a book that he wrote and his wife begged him not to do it. So he never did it. And it wasn't until he was gone, you know, years, years and years after he was, you know, dead that his family was like, this is a story that needs to be told.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of like Marcus also, I think.
Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah. He wrote his diary, never intending it for people to be read, right?
Yeah. And then they changed it into Meditations and it became like the most epic book on Stoicism ever.
That's insane.
Yeah.
when you think back to like kind of the things you had to overcome, what are some kind of, I guess when you think about like the trauma you had to like, overcome when you were older, mm-hmm. what are some of those things that you had to overcome because of the things you went through?
Oh man.
Whether that's like in your relationships or personally, you know?
I would say that specifically, like understanding and learning what love is a real feat, especially as a man, right? Like, you know, you're kind of taught like to, you know, get up, stop crying, wipe the dirt off your knees, like put a bandaid on it, keep going. And so I didn't understand love at all. And it wasn't until I was an adult where, you know, like I had to realize that like other people and their emotions matter. And, you know, being able to process emotions in a healthy way matters. And so it wasn't just in my relationship with my ex, but also in my relationships with other people. Like I always had the mentality of like, you know, don't cry. You know, or I'll give you something to cry about, you know, like tough up, you know, I'm not one that's big on crying or like showing emotion. And so, you know, going through counseling and realizing, you know, I think everybody should go to counseling. Like if you're not seeing somebody and talking to them about the things that you're going through in life or how you feel about certain things, like you only tell other people so much and you'll lie to yourself more than you'll lie to anyone, you know? So like having somebody that you can go to and just be authentically yourself and tell them exactly how you feel without fear of judgment, because like they have like certain disclosures that they got to, you know, follow. Yeah. I didn't know how many skeletons were in my closet until somebody that was trained and a professional went looking for them.
Yeah.
And so like airing all of those things out allowed me to be better in my relationship because I wasn't carrying so much baggage. You know, I wasn't trigger happy or, you know, I wasn't so cold, which initially in my relationship, I was very cold.
Yeah. Damn. I mean, that makes like, especially when you think about you not having that, just kind of that example when you were younger. I mean, yeah, it can be like something tough. And do you feel like you've kind of, got into a better place with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I had never, before my ex, I had never, ever in my entire life told a girl that I loved her. Ever.
Did it just not occur to you? Or like when you thought about it, you were just like...
I just felt like love was such a special thing. And then if you tell everyone you love them, that it takes away the specialness of it.
Yeah.
So I remember even like the way I told her I loved her when I told... I was with her for... I mean, we were together for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Before I ever said I love you. And... I didn't realize that like love was something that you could share with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't, it didn't need to, you know, certain loves are different, that every love is different. And so like, it's interesting because to go from that perspective of like, I never say I love you, you know, like my parents never said it growing up. I rarely said it in my relationship. And then now, like, I've grown to a point where, like, I love to tell people I love them. You know, especially with this Run For It group. Like, yeah. They are really the ones that, like, broke me out of it. Like, Kristen and Brenna, those two specifically, like, got me out of the shell of, like, saying I love you. Like, they'll say it all the time. Like, it's like, all right, I love you. It's like, okay, I love you too. I love that part. Like, yeah. I love to love now. And so, like, I love everybody. And before I leave, I'm gonna let you know that I love you, because it may be the last time that I get the opportunity to say that, and I don't want to live with regret because you didn't know exactly how I felt about you.
Yeah, damn, that's deep right there, for sure. Is there something you what's something that you wish you would have heard at that time of like you being homeless? You know, like something that you wish someone would have told you that would have kind of helped you a little bit more at that time.
Oh man. Like everything's gonna be all right. Like everything happens for a reason. You know, you take everything so personally. Like life isn't personal. You know, like read The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. It teaches you that like one of the agreements you have to make with yourself is to not take things personally. Like we tend to think that everything that happens is part of this major plot against you. But it's not. Like it's character building. Like this is part of your story that where you're developing as an individual. And you know, in those moments, if somebody would have came to me and been like, this is like, you're going to be thankful that this is happening to you in the future, just continue to find the way. Because people are cruel, you know. Like I remember during those times, like everybody was cruel, like, you know, teachers and like even I think a lot of them knew the things that I was going through, but like nobody really was like, hey, let's talk about it, or like, is there anything I can do to help you? Like everybody just kind of like looks at you like you're the bad kid who has no structure or way to go. And so, you know, I think in those moments, like the people that I looked up to, my idols or my, you know, mentors, I wish they would have came to me and been like, hey, this is supposed to happen.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Do you believe in, are you like religious?
Yeah, I would say more spiritual than religious. Like I believe in God. But I don't necessarily believe in like organized religion.
Got you. Do you think about like the meaning of life at all?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got into like a place of what you think it is?
Like what we're doing here?
Yeah.
Oh man, it's such a interesting question. I go back and forth with it. I think that the Bible was written not like a recanting of facts, a book of history, but more of a philosophy and a way to live your life. And so the way I look at things is really like weird. Like I think that like this is your heaven. Like this life that you have here on earth is your heaven. And you get to make it as good as you want it to be by your perspective and how you see things. And so like I teeter on the idea of, you know, go back and forth depending on what's going on in your life. But like I think that like time is linear, that circulates. Like, you've done this before. Mm. Like, you've lived this life more than one time.
Yeah.
And every time that you redo it, you are given the opportunity to make it better. Like, you get a chance to eventually, you get to a point where you figured it out, you made all the right decisions, you made the mistakes that you needed to, but you also succeeded in the ways that you needed to, so that you do live a heaven on earth, mm. right? Because that's what it says, like, in the Bible, right? Like, you're going to be surrounded by your loved ones and, you know, everybody that you love, and it's going to be heaven, right? Like, all good.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you can feel, I'm sure, in your own perspective, like, you've had times where you're like, man, this is heaven. Like,
100%.
It's so good. Like, I'm surrounded by people, like, that I just love, and you feel love in the air, and it's warm, and, you know, like, so that's what I think this is.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, I think the reason, like, because I've had those thoughts before, too, that this is, like, a heaven. Like, we are living that, because your perspective is literally, like, everything. You can experience the same, I guess, event, but have a completely different, like, you can be in a completely different state of mind at that time, and you can have a completely different perception on what that meant for you, you know?
Yeah.
And there's times where it feels like it's hell on earth, too, because you're just, like, whether it's you're anxious as hell, you're depressed, you're, like, you lose someone that was close to you. Like, yeah, that's pretty damn, I would think that's pretty damn close to hell, too, you know? Like, just whatever you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that idea, too, because it kind of makes you not live with, like, a sense of urgency, but at the same time, like, you could be making the most of that time right now, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They told us our whole lives, like, there's so many cliches that you heard as a kid and growing up that, like, you, like, scoffed at or didn't pay attention to, but perception is reality. Mm-hmm. Like, however you perceive a situation is exactly the way that you're going to take it.
Yeah.
And so your perception defines your experience, and your experience defines how you feel.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you've always got a negative, you know, perception, well, then your experience is going to be negative. Mm. And so you're going to feel negative.
Yeah.
Anything can be positive. Anything, like, whether things are great or things are bad, like, and you can see the silver lining
for sure.
And so, yeah, I think that it's all about how you see the world around you. Mm-hmm. If you wake up every day with gratitude and you're grateful for the life that you're given, because, like they say, man, all of us could write all of our problems down on a piece of paper. We could throw them into a pile, and you'll start sifting through them, you know, trying to find the best problems, because everybody's got problems.
Yeah.
You start reading other people's problems, and eventually you'll start searching for your own.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah. And when you kind of get it, like, right, per se, do you feel like you move on to something else?
Absolutely. Mm. You ever experienced deja vu?
Yes, for sure.
Deja vu is a unique thing, and this is what's it started this whole path of, like, you've lived this life before. Like, I feel like deja vu is, like, the moments in your life where something has changed.
Mm.
Like, you lived this experience, and in this moment, something changed that made it head in a new direction.
Oh, shit.
Right? Like, an alternate path.
Yeah.
And that's your tell to know that things are heading in the right way.
Damn.
So you continue to experience deja vu, it's because you're heading in the right direction.
Yeah. That's a trip, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Why Houston?
Why Houston? Yeah. Opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity. When I came into this industry, like, there's two different paths that you can take, Diego. You can go, like, the private wealth management path, and you can go from being a rep to a financial advisor, to mm-hmm. a senior financial advisor, to a wealth management advisor. And you can build a team of advisors underneath you and have your own, you know, private wealth firm.
Yeah.
Or you can go the leadership route, you know, and you can develop other advisors, and you can motivate them to grow into their own and their own paths. And so when I came into the industry, it was unique because I'm early on in my career, and I'm already being identified as a leader.
Mm.
You know, like, they're sending me to everything. Like, I'm going to advanced planning academies. I'm going to leadership summits. Like me being a first year, like I'm surrounded by 5, 6, 7 year people mm-hmm. in the industry. And so I immediately knew that leadership was the way I wanted to go. And, you know, there's steps too. Like it's like you're a rep and an advisor. Then you become a college unit director. So you kind of run the internship program. And then, you know, you then move into a GDD or growth and development director, which you recruit and develop advisors under the network. And then you become a managing director. So you oversee an office with advisors and then eventually become a managing partner, which then you have a territory. Like my managing partner here in El Paso owns all of Kansas, all of Missouri, all of Arizona, all of New Mexico and El Paso. So a huge, huge territory of hundreds of advisors. And so I always knew like, I want to become a managing director. So when I seen El Paso, I was like, this is the perfect opportunity. The managing director here is getting ready to leave. So like, I'll just learn and learn and learn and then take over El Paso and then explode El Paso out. And, you know, things happened and, you know, that managing director, you know, retired early. So we got a new managing director and the new managing director was in Albuquerque. So we overseen Albuquerque and El Paso and me and him had a really good relationship because we both came, he was in other organizations before. He'd been in the career field for 20 years. But he was from Chicago too. So I met him at a leadership summit. And him and I just clicked. And I was like, yeah, this is the guy that's going to teach me everything that I need to know to become a great leader.
Yeah.
And so as he's managing director, in our industry, to get to managing director, it's the decision of the managing partner. So every step that you take is the decision of the managing partner. To become a managing partner, it's the decision of the company. Mm-hmm. So they decide up at home office, like the board of directors decides, you're a managing partner, you get the opportunity. And he got the opportunity. He got elected to become the next managing partner, accepted into the AMP program. And when he called me and he told me like, hey, I got accepted into the AMP. Phoenix is going to come available. They're going to spin off the Southwest. So Phoenix or Arizona is going to take Arizona, New Mexico, El Paso. They're going to become the...
Sorry, dude.
No, you're good. You're good.
Sorry, bro.
It's tough. Hey, man, you're powering through. You're powering through. You're making it happen.
It just sucks,
persisting bro. Without exception. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you could have easily said, no, I can't do this right now.
We need to make it happen, bro.
But you need to make it happen. Right? So yeah, he called me. He's like, hey, Southwest is being spin off. I'm going to go for it. And I was like, cool. Well, if you get it, network office is going to be in Phoenix. I'll move to Phoenix. Yeah. He's like, you sure? I was like, yeah, dude, I'll go with you anywhere.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, great. Arizona, the Southwest is getting spin off this year. That was last year. Houston is getting spin off in 2025. Denver in 2026. Chicago 2027. It's like, those are the next opportunities that are going to become available. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever one I get is whatever one I get. I was like, cool. Like, I'll follow you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. And it was weird because, like, it all made sense. Like, I always felt like I wanted to live in Phoenix because I felt like Phoenix was just a big El Paso. Same weather, same climate, same people, bigger environment.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, Houston is in Texas. It's not a big change from where I am. Mm-hmm. Houston's not so much different than Chicago. Denver, my brother lives there. And then Chicago's going home.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, this is like a weird series of like places that you could go. But whatever it is, like I'm down.
Yeah.
He's like, cool. Like, I need you. I'm like, cool. So then he went for Phoenix. And when you become when you get accepted to become a managing partner, you only get turned down once. So if you go for an opportunity, you bid against the other people who are in line. He went up against another guy from Virginia for the Phoenix job, but the guy in Virginia had already been turned down once. Mm. So he got the Southwest.
Yeah.
And it's you don't usually ever get to take over your own market. Usually they send you to somewhere else.
Yeah.
So he went for Houston. He called me. He's like, hey, man, I'm going to go for Houston. I was like, all right, cool, man. Like I said, you know, wherever you go, like I'm willing to go.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, cool. I'm going for it. And then he got it. He got the Houston gig and he called me and he's excited and he's elated. You know, I'm like, man, congratulations. He's like, are you still coming? I was like, yeah, man, I'm still coming.
Hell yeah.
He's like, you sure? He's like, it's 18 months. He's like, I know you want to be a managing director. I can build you to become a managing director in 18 months, but you got to give me 18 months. Like, you can't come out there and just get it.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll do whatever it takes. Yeah. Like, I know that this is where I want my career to go. I know that this is the path that I'm on. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And if the guy that can help me get there is telling me to go, then I'll go.
Yeah. Dude, that's amazing. I'm excited for you.
Me too. It gives me goosebumps, man, for real. For sure. Like, it's going to be an epic opportunity. I'm sad to be leaving, you know, with Run For It growing to where it's growing and the things that we have on the, like, in the foresight for our future of it.
Yeah.
You know, with, you know, I love my gym, shout out to Black Flag. Nick and all those guys are amazing. Love my gym. Love my friends. You guys are all, you know, amazing people that I've grown so close to over the last, you know, year and a half. But at the end of the day, like, something is telling me that my future is there. Mm-hmm. You know, my journey isn't meant to end in El Paso.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to bet on myself and go make it happen.
Hell yeah.
Every single time that I felt like it was over, it wasn't over. It's not over yet.
Yeah. That makes sense, bro. And I'm happy for you. And I think, I mean, you're going to excel out there. Like, there's no doubt, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And yeah, it's going to be fun, man. And I'm glad that I'm not too far, you know, 2 hours maybe.
Man, 2 hours. Yeah. You know, Fred and I talk about it all the time. Like, we're on the phone every day talking about what we're going to do in Austin.
Yeah.
Big things are coming. Huge things are coming. And, you know, Fred's one of those guys that's a doer too. So we're going to do some crazy stuff. It's going to be exciting.
Hell yeah. Y'all heard it here first.
Absolutely.
So you got that your farewell run coming up this Sunday?
Yeah. So I didn't know if I wanted to do it. Mm. You know, even like announcing to the group that, you know, because you become like the face of it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, people recognize that you're going to get up there and talk, and, you know, they come to you for questions. And I started thinking about, like, oh, man, maybe I'll just disappear into the sunset, you know, just like fade into the shadows.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, man, that's not fair. So I remember the Grammys run. I announced, you know, shout out to Roger Arnonis for winning a Grammy, El Paso's Grammy nominated and Grammy winning artist. Mm. I remember we were at his run and I announced it that I was leaving. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like out of sorts about it. Like, oh, why are you leaving? I can't believe you're leaving. Like, this isn't going to be the same. I'm like, it's going to be the same. Like, Run For It isn't Brian Novak. Mm-hmm. You know, Run For It isn't Thomas, it isn't Brenna, it isn't Kristen. Like, Run For It's a community, it's a group of people who want to, you know, be active and healthy and social. So I was like, all right, cool, I'm gonna make an announcement. I made the announcement, and then Thomas is like, what are you gonna do for your going away? I was like, well, I guess it will do a run.
Hell yeah.
So then I reached out to Johnny and Junie over at Later and was like, hey, you know, it only makes sense to do it big and do it with you guys. So yeah, this Sunday, February 16th, later we're gonna do a run at 11 and then my going away party from 12 to 3.
Hell yeah.
It's gonna be epic. My brother's flying in from Denver.
Oh,
it's gonna
shit.
Be epic. Yeah,
that's exciting.
It's gonna be a party.
Hell yeah, dude.
Bring your liver.
The what?
Bring your liver.
Bring your lover. Hell yeah. Though yeah, it is Valentine's Day weekend, huh?
It is.
Oh, hell yeah. You have a little Valentine?
I don't.
Yeah.
I think that's special, man. Like, you don't just, like, ask anyone, and you don't want to ask everyone either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We could. No, I'm just kidding.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun.
Hell yeah, man. Well, I always leave off with just a question. Well, what's something you would say to someone right now who's just going through like a tough time mentally?
I would tell them that this too shall pass. Mm. You know, everything that you're going through is part of your story. And the most epic movies, the most epic parables that you've ever watched, like, the main character went through some really hard shit. And it was because that they came through it, that they succeeded through it, and they persevered through it, that the story was as epic. Mm. And so you're in a dogfight for the greatest movie of all time. like, go shoot that movie.
Damn. That got me going, bro. Hell yeah. Well, cool. It was a pleasure, bro.
Always, man. Happen.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Shout out to the MVP podcast, yes, everybody. Sir. Go subscribe. Go follow. Follow Diego. He's moving to Austin. Some epic stuff in his journey. I hope that someday somebody gets Diego on the other side of the couch and gets him to tell his story.
Hell yeah. I appreciate it, bro.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, man, this is the last podcast in this studio. It's been, I mean, I've been doing it for almost 2 years. I was actually sitting here like before you came. Mm-hmm. And dude, I don't know. I got a little emotional. I was like, damn, like, it's just more so because when I started it, like, I just, it wasn't anything. It was like, I obviously, like, I had a passion for it, like, for podcasting, and like, I knew how to, like, do the production aspect, but it was not, it was so casual. It was like, okay, like, I want to do it, let's just do it. And then to kind of like look at, I guess, where it's gotten to, it's like, yeah, it's just a trip to see. So
yeah, man, it's epic, dude. Yeah. It's epic. You are MVP, right? Like, people know you as that, they see you as that. It's cool, man. It's exciting to watch because, you know, like, years from now when this is like a global brand and you're having these types of conversations with, you know, celebrities and, you know, it's going to be really cool to look back and be like, man, I started this on an idea that I just wasn't willing to let go of. Mm. That's going to be epic.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. I love that. I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely.
But yeah, guys, we will see you, Gala, in Austin, Texas.
And Houston. H-Town, shout out to H-Town.
Yes, sir.
Find me out there.